97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
Hello, John Hyatt here. I love John Hyatt. I saw him at City Winery a few months ago, and he shared this story about having, about a year ago, having a very severe fall while hiking with his dogs, and he had a brain injury and had to kind of recover from that and learn how to play guitar over again. Not completely, but his muscle memory and his brain had to be repaired. So it was a crazy story. He's a big artist from the 80s. For those people who were around back then, maybe you know John Hyatt. Charles Lipson is with us this afternoon to talk some politics. Professor Emeritus at the University of Chicago. Charles, welcome back. How are you this afternoon? Although I don't see him there. Is he there, Ethan? I thought he was there, and
I think he just,
because I know I pressed the button, right? Okay. Well, Charles will be here. I'll also tell you that coming up at the bottom of the hour, and we have an audio cut of the day, is Chris Elston. Chris is known as Billboard Chris online. He has been a guest on the show for 3 years. I can't even remember exactly how I discovered him, but certainly we became closer in the aftermath of Jamie Reed and the whistleblower report last year. I guess it's almost been 2 years ago now at WashU. And Jamie Reed, of course, exposed all the nonsense that was going on at WashU and the gender-affirming care clinic, the so-called gender-affirming care clinic, which is now, thankfully, closed down, which is good news. But Chris has made it his mission. And I love the way that he has framed this. He's said in the past that he's really on this mission going around the world, not just this country, to take a stand against the greatest child abuse scandal in history, which is this nonsense gender-affirming care. Well, Chris was able to go before the United Nations and do a speech a couple of weeks ago. So he's going to reflect on that and share some stories at 5:25. I think we have Mr. Lipson back. Charles, I did this amazing intro, and you didn't even hear it because the phone line dropped. But it was great. It was the best intro I've ever given to you. I just want you to know
that. Well, I deserve it. I deserve it. I'm delighted to hear it.
You know, I haven't played any of the audio from the 60 Minutes interview last night, so we might do that, you and I, together here. But I have to ask you, because I spent a good portion, if not all of my monologue this afternoon, going over this story about CBS News and Tony DeCoppel and CBS Morning News and what they did last week with Ta-Nehisi Coates. Did you see that, or are you dialed into this particular controversy?
I've only seen the clips of it, but let me take a step back and say, I think that we've reached the high water mark, and it's beginning to recede with all this kind of crazy DEI stuff. As you may know, the shorthand for DEI is didn't earn it.
Yeah, but that's true.
There is a rising tide of concern. I hear it all over the place. But I'll say one thing that may not be so obvious. When people are busy depicting themselves as victims all the time, they really hurt themselves. Even if they are victims, they hurt themselves because there's no way to succeed if you think of yourself as a victim. There's no way to get ahead.
Well, isn't that the entire Democrat Party at this point? Victimhood?
Well, I think there's a lot of victimhood. I think that it's victimhood, and you see this a lot on college campuses, a sense of guilt from people who, you know, mom is a surgeon, dad is a lawyer. What are they guilty about? How have they or their family harmed anyone? There are bad outcomes in our society, and I think that those of us who've done well ought to have some sense of responsibility, and I think that the people who've done poorly ought to have a sense of responsibility, too. There used to be a concept called the deserving poor, and which implied that some people were undeserving, but I don't understand. I think that there's a lot of the Democratic Party that's a kind of coalition of the guilty and the people who sort of proclaim themselves as victims.
So let me kind of explain this, and then we'll get to the 60 Minutes. But what happened, for those people who missed the monologue, on CBS News, Tony DeCoppel, who is one of the anchors on the morning show, did an interview with Ta-Nehisi Coates, who is describes himself as a journalist, but liberal, you know, activist, whack job, who wrote a book on Israel. And this book managed to, Charles, never mention Iran. It didn't mention Hamas, none of this stuff. So Tony DeCoppel actually challenges him, right? So there's blowback from inside CBS News about Tony DeCoppola actually asking some serious questions of Coates, and they start complaining to management. Management does a conference call. It's kind of like their regular conference call, and they out Tony DeCoppola, and they actually go after him for not meeting the standards of CBS News. Now, I think I have, let me see if I can find you the soundbite here, because you have to hear what they were saying in the conference call, where they said that they failed their mission.
I want to acknowledge there are a lot of times that we do this really, and then there are times we don't. And there are times we fail our audiences and we fail each other. We're in one of those times right now, and it's been growing. And now we are at a tipping point.
Now, bear with me here, listen.
Many of you have reached out to express concerns over recent reporting, specifically about the CBS Morning's Coates interview from last week, as well as comments made coming out of some of our correspondents' reporting.
Okay, so they go on to say that that did not meet our standards. They try to say this with a straight face, that the CBS policy, Charles, is check your bias at the door. Did they not know that Margaret Brennan and Nora O'Donnell also work for CBS News? It's unreal when you hear that. And by the way, somebody leaked the whole call, so it's not supposed to be out there. It is fascinating if you take some time to listen to it.
Well, it's humiliating, or it should be, to any journalist. Somebody told me that in journalism schools, I believe they've not been able to find a single Republican on any journalism faculty of any school in the country.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. It's sad.
You went to Missouri, right?
I did. I went to Mizzou, and I'm embarrassed by what they do
in journalism. I mean, in journalism, you went to Mizzou, one of the two or three great journalism schools in the country, along with Medill at Northwestern.
That's right.
And, you know, these schools, I mean, I can understand there's a real problem for journalists trying to find jobs in a changing environment and so forth. But, I mean, the sense that they are torch carriers for political ideology, not just the party, they're on the left wing of the Democratic Party. And but that call exemplifies this sense of sort of groveling guilt for things that are not, they shouldn't be guilty about.
No,
they should be proud of those interviews.
And by the way, absolutely, and I will say this, just in case people missed this, Jan Crawford, who is a veteran journalist at CBS News, stood up for Tony DeCoppola and ripped her bosses and said, what are you guys doing here? I don't even know what the complaints are about. So that's important to notice, because there were some people that didn't feel this way. But what's interesting here is they try to, you know, on one side, they try to deny the level of bias that exists in all this other reporting. But it's very revealing that it comes out in this instance. And by the way, stating the obvious here, this conference call and all of this about this guy who doesn't mention Hamas, he doesn't want to talk about the other perspectives in Israel, in Lebanon, in Palestine. In this situation, the guy...
Friend,
what's that?
Those are freedom fighters,
right,
my
but
friend.
Charles, this all took place yesterday morning on the anniversary of this terrible attack. That's what they're discussing at CBS News on that fateful anniversary. That's even more stunning when you think about it.
But let me tell you, I have a lot of communications within the Jewish community, and people are petrified. I think that, I mean, they were in the 50s about the right wing, the Ku Klux Klan and so forth. That's not what their concerns are now. Their concerns are what is happening on Ivy League campuses.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know whether that's true at WashU and so forth, but it's not true at the University of Alabama, the University of Georgia, Tulane and so forth. So this is a real, this has become a very serious problem. And part of it has to do with the nature of the coalition on campus. By the way, the Palestinians just sued the University of Chicago for discrimination. There's no evidence whatsoever of discrimination against Palestinians. But they make common cause with African Americans, lesbians, gays, that sort of thing. That's the coalition. And because you may have seen signs, Queers for Palestine, whatever it might be, those people would be thrown off a roof in Palestine. But they can all hate Israel, so they can have a negative goal that holds them together, but they can't have a positive goal. And then there are kind of useful idiots like we heard. But on the good side, let me say this about CBS. The interview with Kamala Harris was just brutal. And it was brutal not because they were harsh in a kind of Mike Wallace way, but that guy just asked serious, quiet questions, and she was a word salad.
She really was. And look, the other thing about that is, and this is where I have these mixed feelings about CBS, because Bill Whitaker, the guy who did the interview with Kamala, is also a guy that came, he's a veteran CBS news reporter, anchor. He's the same guy that came in here a few years ago. There was another CBS reporter, Jeff Begaves. They both came in at separate times. We have this, you probably followed some of this with Kim Gardner, our prosecutor, who was like Gascon in L.A.
Yeah.
You know, I call Gascon, who, by the way, is going to get booted out of office. I don't know if you've seen the polling on that. He's going to lose.
No, I haven't.
So,
I know.
Yeah. People are waking up, but he's the Kim Gardner of the West Coast, is what I say.
Right.
So, you know, you have a situation here with some of these folks. It's pretty serious with just letting criminals
go. You said that they came in at the same time as Kim Gardner, but I didn't follow.
Yeah, so here's what happened. They came in here and they did reporting basically trying to, you know, play off St. Louis as just a bunch of white supremacists. They never dug into the real issues of why Kim Gardner was controversial. They let her, you know, speak her mind about how racist people are in St. Louis. I begged them. I told Jeff Begays from CBS. We were, you know, exchanging messages. I'm like, dude, come here to St. Louis again. I'll give you Democrats that'll tell you the truth about Kim Gardner. So I just wanted to say that about Bill Whitaker. To your point, yeah, he actually did his job last night, and I was kind of surprised by that. Here's a sample.
Your economic plan would add $3 trillion to the federal deficit over the next decade. How are you going to pay for that?
Okay, so the other economists that have reviewed my plan versus my opponent and determined that my economic plan would strengthen America's economy, his would weaken it.
Pardon me, Madam Vice President. The question was, how are you going to pay for it?
Well, one of the things...
She didn't really know. I mean, I could play the rest of that, but I give Whitaker some credit, because one of the things that we've seen in both of these debates and in other interviews is nobody ever follows up. They don't press her. Okay, you give an answer. Don't move on. Follow up with a question. And he actually did that, to his credit.
I completely agree. And I thought that was, I thought there were a number of problems with the vice presidential moderators. And I thought the lack of follow up was one. The obvious thing was wrongly correcting Vance.
Yeah, on the Springfield, Ohio stuff.
Right. Mike, but I mean, the main point is that these people all live on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. There was a famous quote by a New Yorker film critic maybe 40 years ago, Pauline Kael. She said she didn't know how Nixon won the election. Nobody she knew voted for him. And I think that that's the problem with these networks now. There's just nobody to hold them to anything like honesty. The same is really true when you read the Washington Post, New York Times. These are, the Times in particular is a good paper in a lot of ways, but whenever anything can be spun politically, I'm talking about hard news, what should be hard news reporting, they report it almost like an editorial.
Of course, because it's agenda journalism. And by the way, you know, my alma mater, and you mentioned Medill, these journalism schools, they're proud of this. This is how they are teaching these, you know, young students to become journalists with a capital J. They don't really care about getting all sides of the story, as many of us were taught back in the day. They care about the impact that their reporting has on making people feel equitable and safe and all this other stuff. It's just nonsense.
I completely agree. And I think in this kind of fragmented media environment that we live in today, what happens is that people have abandoned those traditional sources because that were once considered kind of neutral. Maybe they were a little on the traditional liberal side, but they believed in multiple viewpoints, and they didn't believe that their hard news was, they thought their hard news should be segregated from their editorial opinion.
Right.
And I just think that that sort of thing has gone away. You're a show that does opinion, and then you have a newscast, and the newscast is different from your opinion.
Right, but you know what? I have a better example than this, because I'm on a conservative radio station right now, and we don't make any bones about it. But, Charles, I worked for 15, 16, maybe the math is wrong, doing afternoon drive at KMOX, one of the most esteemed stations in the entire country, not unlike WBBM in Chicago or some of the other big heavy hitters out there. And I did a show from, for many years, it was 2 to 6, and then they shortened it from 2 to 5. But it was really two shows. And I've done this through much of my career. I was a news director in the past, and then I started doing talk in 1992. But what I did was, and I took this seriously, between 2 and 4, I did a talk show. My opinions were out there. Between 4 and 6, we did a news wheel. And I had a co-anchor that was with me, Carol Daniel. And I treated that period as a newsy segment. And I didn't put as much opinion in. I certainly wasn't popping off about Trump and some of these other things. Every once in a while, I'd say something. But I actually approached that in wore two different hats, which I think is possible. But you don't have two different hats anymore. You just have the one hat with many of these reporters. Now, Tony DeCoppola, in a very ironic twist here, he's a guy that actually tried to do the right thing and ask some serious questions of Coates. And then he gets laid out by his own management for being a journalist and doing the right thing.
Yeah, there are a few of them left. Some of them get fired. I'm trying to remember the woman who did the national intelligence reporting for Fox and then went over to CBS, and then they fired her, and she was terrific.
Oh, yeah, Clarissa, was it Clarissa Ward or one of the other ones?
I mean, Clarissa Ward was good, but this was a different...
I know who you're talking about. We'll think about it here before the end of the segment.
But by the way, I'm so glad you mentioned KMOX. Your listeners know I grew up in Mississippi, but we could get KMOX. And I grew up a Cardinals fan because I could listen to KMOX.
Well, you have that in common with, I always use Billy Bob Thornton as an example, because he grew up in Arkansas. And the same thing. You know, he listened to Cardinals games, became a big fan. By the way, it's Laura Logan who we were thinking about. Laura Logan. That was the CBS
Yes. Well, she too. But there's yet another. Catherine Herridge.
Oh, Catherine Herridge is great. Yeah. She's at Fox
that's
now.
That's who
right.
I was thinking of.
Okay.
And she was fired.
Yes.
Or let go in a cost-cutting move or something. But she was a terrific reporter.
Right.
And very much down the middle. And she just did intelligence reporting. I mean, you can generally speaking, I'd say the Pentagon reporters are pretty down the middle. But, boy, you just hate to see. There was one of the managing editors of the New York Times who retired in maybe the 80s or something like that. And he was asked what he was proudest of, and he said, "I kept them honest."
Yeah.
And at the time, people didn't realize how important that was. They just thought, well, of course, you know, that's how it should be. But, in fact, Abe Rosenthal. And but that's what he did. And they've just abandoned that now. And maybe that's a marketing decision. But look at what's happening. You have people moving to red states where taxes are lower, regulation allows businesses to grow. Generally speaking, not always, you have competent officials, except in the cities where you have this kind of left-wing mobilization politics.
Yeah. Well, by the way, there's no better example than Chicago and Illinois. You know, I always say the people who are truly, you know, we have these discussions about voter ID, and people like to say, forcing someone to have an ID when they vote, that's you're disenfranchising voters, which is a bunch of nonsense. I always say, you know who's really disenfranchised? Anyone who lives in Illinois south of Cook County.
Oh, yeah. It's really true. And by the way, at the Democratic National Convention, you couldn't get in without an ID.
I know. That's what's amazing. Hey, listen, I got to go. We can always talk politics till the till the end of the show. But thank you so much. We got 4 weeks, Charles, 4 weeks until this election. If you had to call today, if the results are coming in tonight, what would you say?
I think Trump wins. And I think he wins because I think he wins Pennsylvania.
I know.
Whoever wins Pennsylvania, I think, is very likely to win the election.
Yeah, that's the way it seems right now. And I'm kind of, you know, Selena Zito, my friend Selena, is doing some great reporting. It is seemingly looking relatively good, but we got 4 weeks to go. Charles, have a great week. Thank you.
Great to talk to you, Mark.
Take care.
Get more at 971talk.com.